live from the Ghost Hunter Store. Brought to you by the Shadowlands, South Jersey Ghost Research, and the Ghost Hunter Store. Here's some paranormal straight talk with your hosts, Dane Giuliano and Marty Haynes.
Hi everybody, we're back. We're going to give this one more try here. We're here tonight with Sharon Vince. She's a director of the Library Company of Burlington, one of the most haunted buildings I've had the pleasure of investigating, as well as a very historical building. Of course, Marty's here with me tonight.
How you doing?
Sharon, if you could give us a little history. I know you just went through this, but no one heard you. So if you can go through that history again, that'd be great.
No problem. Again, I want to thank Dave and Marty for having me here tonight. I appreciate it. The Library Company was founded about 253 years ago by a group of about 60 men who decided that the library would be good for our community. So they collected about 700 books. And they began the Library Company of Burlington. They had to charter, so they had to petition to the king to see if they could actually have the license to run a library. So they petitioned the king in November of 1757. This again is before we were America. The king sent them the charter, and they received it on January 1st of 1758. So the books that we have in our collection are still there at the library. If you come in, you'll see them over the mezzanine area. So we first began the library in the private home of Thomas Rodman, which was very usual for small communities at this time. But after a couple of years of that, Governor Bloomfield got tired of the library moving from home to home. So he gave them $50 in paper money to build the first public library building in the United States, and that was in 1789. We stayed in that building for about 75 years until the new building that we're in now, which isn't very new. It was built in 1864, and that number is right there with the Civil War. So it was unusual for any kind of building to go on and during the Civil War. So we're very fortunate to have what we have. The building that we're in now is an old brownstone building, and it houses all of the collection of the library that we've had for the 253 years, again with the original collection. The oldest book in our collection dates back to 1551. It was written about 100 years after the Gutenberg Press, and the title of it is called The Blood of Christ. So we have a huge collection of the old books that are still there. The charter that we received from the king is still there in the library. It's pretty much faded now, but it has the names of all 60 men that formed the library. It has the seal of King George II. And the funny thing is, we still actually operate under that charter. A lot of people think that we're a city-owned library or a state-owned library.
So you're still owned by the king.
We're still owned by the king. But they, I don't think they know it anymore, you know. I hope they don't find out either, because I don't want to get a tax bill from them. But we're still there. We've been at that location that we're at since 1864. We've had an addition put onto the building in 1958, and everything still is running smoothly.
One thing I should mention too, I'm trying to repeat everything we said the first time when we couldn't be heard. The store, out of the Ghost Hunter store, we've done little expeditions going out there for adults to do investigations with us. And we've also taken kids on just special kids only investigations, 10 to 17 years old, at least two times. And during those trips, the activity was really heightened, I think, because of all the kids' energy out there. But this is one of the most haunted places I've ever investigated. There's always something good happening. It's also probably one of the most recent times that I've actually gotten a bit unnerved and enough that I walked backwards out of a basement because I didn't want to turn my back on anything that was there. And it usually takes a little bit extra to get me to that point, but it was an interesting experience to say the least.
Yeah, I don't think there's a time we've been in there where we haven't gotten at least two or three good pieces of evidence coming out.
Now, it's we were trying to key up some of our EVPs for you, but then we had to go trying to get some of the other sounds worked out. So we might play them at a later date, or if maybe if we have enough time at the end, we can play them. Sharon, can you tell us a little bit about like the haunted history? Like, when was the first documented sighting of something there that you're aware of?
Oh, that I'm aware of. Well, when I came into the library, I think the first time that I was ever introduced to hauntings going on in the library was by the former director. A book fell on the bookshelf. There was nobody in the library. It was just us. It was closed. And a book just decided to fall over. And I've never seen anybody jump like she did. She jumped and she goes, oh, I got to get back to work. They're telling me to get back to work. And I'm like, who's telling you? You know, what are you doing? And that's when she believed that the hauntings were done by Lydia Weston. There's a great picture in the library. I think it's Lydia Weston and Hannah Severns. And it dates back to about 1915. And so she was pretty convinced that it was Lydia Weston telling her to get back to work. But there's been, we have one lady that's been there for 30 years, Sandy, and she has seen things and heard things for as long as she's been there. But the whole funny thing is, when you're there in the library, it doesn't have to be at nighttime. I think I get more happening to me in the daytime than I ever do at night.
I remember there was a day I was supposed to meet you to pick up some tables for an event we were doing. And I pulled up and saw your office light on and thought, okay, Sharon's here already. And I went up, knocked on the door, banged on the door, turned around and walked away, and I watched the light shut off, and then you pulled up.
Yeah, nobody was in there.
Nobody was in there.
Nobody was in there.
That's a common misconception anyway that people have about ghosts and hauntings, that more activity is during the night than it is during the day. And it's just not true. You have to be in a position or a location where you're able to notice it more. And like a quiet library or a place like that, you're more likely going to notice stuff when you're there because you don't have all the distractions that in a normal location during the day that you would have.
Well, at some point, the upstairs, which is very active, was a Masonic hall?
Yeah. It was used as a Masonic meeting place.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's always very active. That's really neat because in that doorway, everybody complains about being men being pushed in and women being pushed out.
Because you're not invited.
Yeah.
That was the room that we were having a big problem with at one time. The lights kept coming on all the time, constantly, even when in the day or at night. And I would have neighbors come over from across the street and said, well, you know, the lights came on at 2:00 in the morning last night. And I'm like, well, what are you doing up at 2? I go, well, I can't sleep. So, you know, I was sitting there just looking out of the window and the lights in the library came on. So she would tell me constantly, you know, every night what time the lights came on. And we go up there and sometimes they would be on and we'd turn them off and sometimes they wouldn't be. And then finally, you know, I just told her it was the cleaning lady. But I think she just recently found out that it wasn't the cleaning lady. The situation was that we had a vintage wedding gown display up there for the Christmas holidays, and they did not like the dresses up there. They didn't like the presence of the females.
I remember that. That was probably one of the first investigations I did there. And yeah. I know we got a lot of activity up in that room that night. We had a lot of EMF going off. We had a lot of movement in the back, that back little storage area
yes.
they have in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
the old book
that.
Room.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sharon, now you're currently an investigator with South Jersey Ghost Research, in charge of their PR department. But you when you originally, I know when originally I went out there for the first couple times, you were a client, so you're now a client and a member. But what made you, after seeing how the investigations were done, you know, you decided you wanted to join a group and get into this, get into the investigating? What kind of, where was the point where you crossed over from the observer to into want to actively?
Well, after meeting everybody and you coming in and doing the lectures and seeing how you conducted them and you explained activity to the public and how not to be afraid of it and what to look for, what not to look for, I found it fascinating. And having come from Charleston and have kind of been around paranormal for a while, I thought, well, this would be my golden opportunity to learn more about the unknown. And that's why I decided to join, because you were very professional, you had all the equipment, and it wasn't, at that point, which amazed me, was the fact that you could use today's advanced equipment and show that there was paranormal activity. It wasn't the situation, well, I have to see it to believe it. It's, I've felt it, I've known it, and now I can show it.
Right.
It's tangible.
You got the evidence, yeah.
Does that change the way now that, I mean, you still go in there every day to work. Does that change the way that you look at the whole library and the whole, or the activity there?
You know, I've always accepted it. I don't think it's changed any of it. I know that they're there. I know we have the spirits there, and I know some of them come in, some of them come out. I am so excited that they're there. I'm appreciative that they're there, because they're looking out after the history of the library. They have invested in it, mm-hmm. with probably their soul and their life when they were alive. And they have a commitment to the library. So I appreciate it. When they're there, I know when they're there. They let me know it. I've had them come in and bump my chair in the office, you know, my hair standing on the back. And it's not that I'm afraid. It just happens. It's just a physiological reaction to something like that. And I politely get up out of the office. I said, okay, I'll give you 30 minutes, and then you can have it, and I'll come back to work in 30 minutes. And it usually works out pretty good.
Just don't steal any of my pens.
I know we've had a lot of activity, especially I know on the events that we've run out of the store there, but all on our investigations as well. There's been very few that were totally uneventful. I remember with the first kids investigation there, a book flying off a shelf at somebody. Mm-hmm. And I also remember there's a catwalk that runs almost completely around the first floor. And it's just, there's other bookshelves and other things up there.
It does run completely around.
It runs all the way around. I know there's just that hole I try to avoid so I don't fall into it. So I don't go all the way around. Yeah, but there's a lot of older books up there and everything. Mm-hmm. And we had motion sensors set off. And this is something that you'd have to be up there and be directly in front of the motion sensor to set off. They're passive infrared ones, so they require infrared heat coming off of something to trip. And while the kids were downstairs, some of them started going off. And then it kept going off for almost like 10 minutes. But in a pattern as if someone was walking the entire catwalk in the same order. They would go, the motion sensor were going off in the order that they were placed.
Sequence, yeah.
And that didn't stop. And that was something that was pretty amazing. That was, you know, because that's something that we would be, you know, ready to kill for, or to have on a regular investigation, yeah, that kind of evidence. Mm-hmm. And because it was more of a laid back kind of kids event. No, well, we didn't have our cameras with us and stuff like that.
They were also getting EMF spikes.
Yes.
Up in that area, almost to where they could follow it around and know when the next motion sensor was going to go off.
Now, keep in mind, we're talking about EMF spikes and these motion sensors going off. These were kids that averaged in age about 12 to 13 years old, pretty much. They were able to place the equipment and use the equipment way faster than I've ever seen any adult class. Even some of the classes that I give for a weekend class, and I take them out to the library for investigations. Now, they've just had 2 days worth of training, and they struggle in setting up equipment and everything. These kids, it was natural. They knew exactly what to do. But Marty, I wanted to let you explain. I know the last time, I think, or the second to last time, I know we were both there when you were using your thermal imaging camera.
My thermal
imaging camera? Your adopted thermal imaging camera that I never see. But you got some pretty interesting things with that night, too.
Oh, up on the catwalk. We were going out up towards the office. They have pictures. And what are the pictures?
The pictures are of the first founding board of trustees.
Okay. And we keep picking up on one still being there. And, in fact, Sharon has felt him or kind of seen him looking down over her office because the ceiling's open. So we were up there, and I was doing some EVPs, and I asked them to just touch the picture that is yours so that we know who it is.
All right, I think we're back.
All right, let's finish it up.
We told Sharon to stop so you could hear the rest of the story. Hopefully you guys can hear us. Just shout out there on the chat room, according to the server. Okay, we can hear. Go ahead, Sharon.
Okay.
Pick up your story where we left off.
So the second time, the door they found open again. And the guy said, no, don't push it in. He goes, let's take a picture. And when he took the picture, there was one of the catalog cards sticking up. Well, he opened it, he pulled it up to see what it said.
Yeah.
And it was the book called Dance with the Dead.
Nice. And they were trying to tell us something.
I think they were trying to tell us something.
But they went down there dancing. Then.
Such the neatest story. I was amazed at that happening. That was cool.
That's cool.
Okay, see, it says sound too low. We haven't changed anything again. All we did was reconnect to the server. I'm at a loss for this because we're not touching any knobs here, no buttons, got hands off.
Sounds like you hear you okay.
All right, could be just that you might be sitting too far back from the mic.
Yeah.
My voice kind of booms too. Sometimes you can't. When I talk at lectures and there's a microphone, I usually don't need it. So my voice might carry a little bit longer. While we still have 5 minutes left, I remember last week we started with the lesson of the week or the thought of the day or stuff like that.
The quote of the week?
Yeah, I actually did think of something today, actually, when I was reading something. So I thought I'd share that with everybody. I have a problem with people calling themselves demonologists. There were very few people that are trained. Well, I should say very few people who are out on the internet publicizing themselves that are trained demonologists. Even people that probably could get away with using the term and putting that tagline behind their name because of all the work they've done, don't use it. It's just a simple... it's misleading, first of all. And because there's so many denominations... In just the Christian beliefs on who you're trained by and how you become one, it's more of a misleading term. I know that Marty and I in South Jersey Ghost Research, I personally primarily only deal with the negative cases. And it didn't start out that way. We avoided them. We handed them off. But over the past 12 years ago, we started working with people such as John Zaffis and Adam Lai, and Debbie and Larry Elward and people like that, and we wound up doing more and more on our own, so to the point where we've seen quite a bit more than I have wished to have ever seen. And I would never ever even consider mentioning on our webpage that we deal with the demonic or anything like that, let alone call myself a demonologist. I think the people that are out there that are doing it, some people genuinely have been trained and received some training. And it seems like it's a label that is attention getting. But there's quite a few people out there who have read a book and watched a movie or attended a seminar somewhere and consider themselves demonologists or at least promote themselves that way. And, you know, that's very, very dangerous. not only for them, but obviously the common sense gene is lacking in them to begin with. So they don't, all cylinders aren't firing there, but to the people that they might go out and help. Because the people don't necessarily understand what I'm talking about when people are looking for help. They look for the person they find. So the person with the fanciest website or the most charismatic person or the best looking person or the person who simply just presents themselves the best may be the person they decide to call or have come out. And that person may have zero experience with what they're doing. So anyone who needs help like that, even including other groups, seek out someone who knows a little bit more than you. Even though we've been dealing with this for years now, going on cases, I constantly call people, other people such as John and Debbie and Larry and Adam and other people that I know have been doing it longer than me, simply just to bounce stuff off. I don't know everything. No one does. There's always going to be someone that has a little more practical experience than you. And when you're dealing with things like this that can be so dangerous, it's better to get a wide variety of opinions before you go in. Because not only are you putting yourself and your family in danger, you are putting the people that you are trying to help in danger. And if you sincerely want to help them, why would you be putting them at risk of doing them more harm? That's just something to think about. And I think, unless Marty, you got a comment you want to throw on the end of that.
No, you pretty much hit it on the head there. I would like to make sure that we thank Sharon for coming out. You did an awesome job, and we appreciate all the information.
No, thank you. I hope
you got like a minute if there's anything else you want to promote from your library real quick.
Well, we do have the psychic fair that's coming up, and I want to thank you for helping us with that. That is going to be on May 14th. You can stop in at the library at 23 West Union Street in Burlington City. Between 4 o'clock and 10 o'clock if you'd like to have a little knowledge about what's going to happen in your future.
And I just wanted to throw out another thing. The Ghost Hunter Store has launched a brand new website today. Because it's brand new, there are plenty of bugs to be found and we can't find them all ourselves. So there's a coupon code out there that gets you 10% off when you buy something. The word's Easter. If you put that in, you'd be helping us a lot by running through and finding any of the bugs or any of the pictures that are missing or any code that's not working. Just give us a holler. You can give us a call or send us an email so we can get that fixed as soon as possible. Well, we appreciate and thanks for listening and thanks for putting up with our technical difficulties. We'll get smoother sailing as we go along. Stay tuned. We got another show coming up right behind us, metaphysically speaking. Thanks. Good night.
See you next week.